Hello, my friends, and welcome to Take a Deep Breath. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm a breathwork coach and I'm also the host of this YouTube channel. And today I have a wonderful guest on the podcast. I have AJ Fisher. Now, some of you may have read about her in news outlets. She had apparently a restraining order from Amy Schumer, the actress. And it was all a bit of fun and a bit of a joke because actually AJ Fisher was Amy's trainer. She's also trained Gwyneth Paltrow. And AJ's got a beautiful view of the breath when it comes to training. There's some mental arithmetic going on. There's a load of stuff going on. There's certain bands and ribbons that she's got going on. And she probably has the most energy of anybody I've ever spoken to, as you'll see in this podcast. Her energy is so enthusiastic. Just even thinking about her now just gets me reared up, ready to go. So I think, you know, I can see why people choose her, celebrities choose her as a personal trainer. So we're going to talk a lot about her journey with the breath, how she uses the breath with celebrity clients and non-celebrity clients, and what's going on there with some of the work that she does. So you're going to have a really good time listening to this. It's one of those ones where it's good to have a pen and paper because you're going to get quite a lot of value from this as well. Before we get stuck in, I just want to say a huge thank you for you being here and being part of this journey. And if you haven't done so already, please like, subscribe, share, and or comment, because it helps grow this channel. It means we can get bigger guests, add more value, and this whole community grows, which I'm so grateful for, that you give up your time to be here with me as I get to interview and learn with you with these top wonderful experts from all over our great planet. If you like breathing, which I assume you do, then you might want to download my free ebook PDF with my 7 essential breathing exercises. The link is down below. Get instant access to that and you can go away and play with those breathing exercises straight away as well. Anyway, let's get stuck into the breathcast. Here is my new friend, AJ Fisher. Cheers. Welcome to Take a Deep Breath podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing so well. I'm just, you know, I'm living the life in Brooklyn, New York. I've been bouncing back and forth between the Upper West Side and the Upper East Side today. I've been actually training quite a bit. I'm now in my online studio here where I do all my online classes and my remote personal training sessions. So I'm so thrilled to be talking to you. This is such an honor. It really, really, really is. I love your energy and all of the work that you've put into this sphere. I mean, it's so important, and you know, and I'm so excited that we're connected.
Yeah, no, well, no, it goes both ways, because when I saw your website and I've seen some of your videos on your YouTube channel, I was like, I can't wait to speak to you and pick your brains. And already we've just had a couple of minutes chat before we hit record, and it's like, I'm loving your energy levels. It's really infectious. And so even though it's like 8:15 here, I'm like, right, let's dial it up, let's get going. So I can see how, if I was training with you, for example, I can just see how you'd get the best out of people, because I'm already inspired just to give more energy. So very cool.
Oh yes,
love it.
Yeah, so I'm so happy that we're, that this is our starting place, and we're just going to go up from here.
Yeah, very cool. So let's I always like a little bit of a good backstory, so maybe if you can, because you've mentioned before Broadway. I know you're doing this Hypoxics, is that how you pronounce it?
Hypoxics yeah. Is the company. Hypoxics yeah. Is the online studio. And wow, I mean, the backstory is pretty long and pretty circuitous, if it's okay.
Please.
So basically I moved to New York City to be a Broadway dancer and singer. I mean, yeah, I know thousands and thousands and thousands of individuals have this dream. And so, but I've always been a person who has really gone for it. I mean, I had the most amazing mother. I mean, single mom, you know, raised both my sister and I. We grew up in a log cabin that my father built. You know, my parents were divorced at a young age. But I think people always find that a pretty interesting story, because we grew up in a log cabin. We had a wood stove. We actually had to chop wood to create heat in the house. So I think that was the first really lesson, I guess, in grit. Just knowing, okay, if I don't help mom chop the wood, then there's a chance that we may not have heat outside of the electrical heat that's in the bathroom. I mean, my dad did. I mean, he was a brilliant carpenter. He did an amazing job building the house, but he just decided not to put electrical heat throughout the rest of the house. So we had to rely on that wood stove. And, you know, so that was where I grew up, about an hour south of Boston. And I, as a side job, I did a lot of cranberry bogging, worked on a farm about an hour south of Boston, very one of the centers of the Ocean Spray factory. If you're familiar with Ocean Spray, the cranberry
Yes,
drink,
yep.
cranberry cocktail. And so acres and acres and acres of cranberry bogs. And so not only was I chopping wood in the log cabin, but then I was going and cranberry bogging and picking potatoes in the fields and onions and doing that as my side job when I was growing up. I mean, early part of junior high school, and this is all the while I was getting amazing competitive dance training and singing training and acting training because I really wanted to pursue a performing arts career. And so, you know, I thank my mom for that because I always, you know, looked to her for how she, just how she brought my sister and I up and how much she prioritized our passions and outside of, in addition to having to work so hard to, you know, to bring us up and also us to have to, my sister and I had to work so hard to just, you know, to live. She made sure that she fostered that love of music, of dance, and she really, you know, she encouraged it, she pushed it. You know, even when times got really tough, we always, you know, we always had many hours a week of focusing on the thing that we really loved and focusing on short-term goals and long-term goals. And I think that can be, you know, really challenging to do when like your parents are struggling or your parent is struggling, or you know, just life is like life brings you many challenges. And I think sometimes the kids, it's easy for the parents, you know, just to give, you know, give a kid an iPad or, you know, or just give them to the babysitter or whatever. And even if they love you, they don't mean any harm by it. But there sometimes just doesn't seem enough time to encourage and also pay for, you know, extracurricular activities. And so she was really big on that. And it really produced fruit for both of us. We've both been able to use that, you know, that grit that we learned at a really young age by observing her behavior and also the behavior that she instilled in us. So thank you, Mom. I feel like I'm gonna cry right now. It's crazy. I don't always dig this deep, but that's really where it began. And so that was, you know, that was junior high school, about an hour south of Boston. Used to have a wicked hard accent, like no Oz ever. So really like pretty similar to, you know, to your accent, because it is like the British accent, but moving into like the Boston area where it's like that very hard, you know, no, like no R whatsoever. And so I had to train that out of my, you know, my dialect because I wanted to go into theater. And so at that point I went to college, went to Bard College in Annandale and Hudson, New York. So I went to New York to go to college, but after a year there, I realized I wasn't really doing what I wanted to do because it was very avant-garde, very performance arty. I just really wanted to be on Broadway. I was obsessed with it. You know, you get obsessed with a thought and you just can't. And you can't stop working at it. And if you're not working at it, it's very frustrating. And so I felt like I wasn't, and I was going into New York City on the weekends and I was auditioning and I was starting to, you know, study with teachers in New York, but it just wasn't enough. I felt like I wasn't in the right place at the right time. So at that point I did leave. I'm a dropout. I totally dropped out of college. And but it was good though, because I dropped out when I should have, because I would have stayed in college and pursued the performing arts degree. And I'm happy that I didn't do that, because at that time it was the right path for me to leave school and to start working on my performing career, start getting jobs in regional theater and national theater, you know, touring the world. I worked with Cirque du Soleil. I helped originate a show in Montreal, one of the only shows actually where they combined theater with their circus artists. That was my off-Broadway job before I actually finally achieved my Broadway dream, about 10 years after pounding the pavement. And I was in the Broadway show Mamma Mia, for 4 years, and I was a swing in the show. And for anyone who doesn't know what a swing is, ultimately that means I am understudying nine of the ensemble roles of the track, nine ensemble tracks in the show. And so that could mean on any given night, the stage manager, and talk about adrenaline rush when I see the Mamma Mia stage manager calling me, you know, at 6:30 p.m. and call time is 7:30. I'm like, oh boy, here we go. What's it going to be tonight? And he'll say, well, Girl two and girl three and girl four are all sick tonight, so you need to cover all of their parts. You need to dance girl three, and you need to sing girl two for the first half of the show and girl one for the second half of the show. And I know you haven't even learned the harmonies for like girl four, but guess what? You're doing girl four and you're going to be in the booth and you're pretty much singing a solo. And so I'm like scrambling, you know, every night, like talk about just cortisol spikes when they shouldn't be spiking, you know, and like, I see you with your blue light blocking glasses on. I mean, all of us should have had blue light blocking glasses on stage, you know, majorly bright LED light shining in your face. You know, you don't go on stage until 8 p.m. I mean, the, you know, the peak of the show, you know, the big grand finale of the first act is at like 9 p.m., you know, and it was a high stress job, but it was also extremely mentally fulfilling.
If you love breathing as much as I do, then you probably already know that breath work is one of the fastest ways we can change our state. We can induce feelings of concentration and focus. We can make ourselves relax. We can fall asleep. We can lower blood pressure, improve heart rate variability, improve lower back pain, and so many other things. But there's so much out there, right? There's so many contradictory methods. There's probably thousands of breathing techniques out there. There's hundreds of different people talking about breath work right now. It's getting really popular. And so it can be quite daunting to know where to start. Well, look, I've interviewed about 100 of the world's top experts now. I've got a whole podcast dedicated to it. So if you want to get stuck into those, absolutely can do, and you can learn like I've learned. Or for those of you out there that are thinking, do you know what, I just want to know the information that's bespoke to me right now, then I actually take on one-on-one clients. So I only take on a very, very small amount of clients each month, and I build a package that's just for you. So we start off by doing your breath assessments. I will run through about five different ways that I can measure your breath. So we'll get a really good view of your chemistry, of your mechanics, of your nervous system, your sleep, really build a beautiful picture about what's going on with you right now. Then we look at your goals. Where are you trying to get to? What is it you really would like? If I could wave a magic wand for you right now and you could get anything by using the breath, what would it be? And then we look at those two things, and then I help you then get there by building your own bespoke breath coaching package. So it's very exclusive. It's only a couple of people. It's direct access, one-on-one. They book up fast. So if you'd like to have a complimentary breath consultation with me, see if you'd be a good fit, then click on the link below. There's a small questionnaire to complete, and then we can jump on Zoom, have a chat. And if it's a good fit, then we can get stuck into your bespoke breath coaching plan. Thank you so much for listening. Now back on with the podcast.
Just because the role of the swing is that you never know what combination you're going to get on any given night. And so rarely do you perform the same track two nights in a row. Whereas many individuals who get hired to be in an ensemble on Broadway or even a lead on Broadway, they're performing the same role every single night. And so, you know, they're getting a high level of practice at that and skill, which is great. But there's also boredom that comes along with that. You know, some artists will say, I would rather not do the Broadway thing and just be, you know, and just do smaller shows, maybe not get paid as much, but just do my own thing so that I can make different music on different nights and not do that repetitive over and over and over, you know. And it's really exciting when you first get on Broadway because it feels like such an accomplishment because there are so few who achieve it and, you know, you work so hard for it. But of course that wears off just like anything, you know, and then after, you know, for me, I mean, that lasted for almost an entire year because it took me about that long to get through all of the different combinations of nine female tracks in the ensemble, you know? And so that was exciting and that kept it really interesting for me. The cool thing about being a swing in a Broadway show is that some nights you actually are not in the show because you are the understudy. Now in a show like Mamma Mia, because it's been on Broadway for 13, at that point it was 13 years, people are really comfortable with calling out sick or going on vacation, you know? So as a swing, you're definitely going to have more opportunities to perform in the show because of that, just of that level of comfort. And, you know, it's not very common for to get a job in a long running Broadway show, where as a performer, you can rely on a weekly paycheck and you're making pretty good, like decent money for a performer, you know, whereas, you know, most are considered starving artists. So anyway, the reason I bring up Mamma Mia is because that really was a key turning point for me, because after I got back to the city after touring with Cirque du Soleil, And I had already been training as a side job for years and years leading up to this. So I had been personal trainer certified for years. It was one of the things I did to support myself. And so I've always been obsessed with, anatomy and biomechanics, and just really kind of was an autodidact in that area and really connected well with it. I love the one-on-one experience. I just love that feeling of helping someone, and one person particularly. I mean, I did teach classes, but I didn't love that as much because sometimes I could see someone doing something incorrectly and that bothered me, but I couldn't really focus on that one person because I was teaching a class of 20 people. And so I decided that I loved that one-on-one connection. And so when I came back from Cirque du Soleil, right before I got the show with Mamma Mia, I worked I worked with an amazing, amazing lady, Anna Kaiser, and she has a pretty well-known studio here in New York and also in LA, and her studio, Anna Kaiser Studios. I basically was with her from the beginning, where we were just going into clients' homes and training one-on-one, and she was really a strategic turning point for me in terms of really going deep, deep, deep into training. So when I got the job, Mamma Mia, I also had become so obsessed with personal training. I loved it so much that I was taking clients from like 6 in the morning until 6 p.m. I would get the call from the stage manager around 6:30, telling me what combination of tracks I was going to do that night, and I would go to the Broadway show. So I was personal training all day long, and then going to the show and performing all night
Wow.
long. I did not have kids yet at that point, and my husband and I were not married yet. So it was definitely 100%. I mean, from the moment my eyes opened until the moment they closed, I was hustling and bustling, and I mean, talk about grit. Totally, totally insane. I would never go back to that schedule, but it definitely, bore fruit, now later in life, because I got so many hours of personal training, and also I met some really amazing individuals during that time, that I know that I can always rely on those hours of skill, that practice of working several hours a day while I was in Mamma Mia. And then when I didn't have to go onto stage on any particular night, I was working on certifications, on my Pilates certification, on corrective exercise certifications, on, gosh, I did so many certifications when I was there. And I even started my, at that point, I started to then work on completing my undergraduate degree. So now, cut to, oh, I don't know, this is probably 12 years after I dropped out of college the first time at Bard. I now decided to go back in, but now go for exercise science. So I'm so happy that I didn't finish it the first time, because I feel like I got so much more out of my degree, because ultimately I got the performing arts degree, but not at a university, but in real life, just through the practice, like doing regional theater and doing, Cirque du Soleil and like Mamma Mia, the whole thing. So luckily I had enough courses, and I wrote a lot of portfolios, which ultimately means you can write papers for the university to prove that you have a certain level of knowledge in the area. I qualified to go into, I think it was junior year at that point, and I did this all online, because I was doing it when I was backstage at the show, whenever I didn't have to be in the show. And ultimately I ended up finishing my bachelor's in exercise science, which is great. And it was at that point that I started to become really curious, highly curious, probably borderline, maybe not even borderline, maybe 100% obsessed with breath control in conjunction with exercise. And I think, probably because I was getting my Pilates certification, I was really interested in Joseph Pilates and why he decided, I mean, his original method was called Contrology, and how he decided to choreograph the breath, and why did he inhale here, and why did he exhale here, and how did that help with the core. And so, so I started reading a lot about his methodology and, his books. And then, of course, I was becoming certified with Pilates, and I started writing. I made the conscious decision, probably the final year of doing the undergrad, to focus a lot of my papers on just breath control and exercise, breath control and injury prevention, breath control and, cognition. And I think it was one of the last papers I wrote, and this really inspired me to immediately go into my graduate degree. was looking at some of the, and I think it was the Xavier Worons papers, where he, I don't even know how I came upon him. I think it was just all of the research at the American Public University Library, where I started seeing his name coming up and looking at the you know, those long exhalations and to low lung volume, in combination with sprinting, with cycling, with running, just with elite athletes. And so I became really fascinated with this French physiologist, or is he Swiss? Are you familiar with Xavier Worons?
No, I need to check him out.
He's, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, I'm going to send you papers after this. You would, I mean, he's, I know that just because I'm doing reading on Patrick McCowan, and I know you're Oxygen Advantage certified. And so now, and you know, I'll finish this story, then I'll move to that, because I see that he also writes a lot about, and I think he was also inspired by Xavier Warren. So it's so interesting, the you know, the correlation between the two. But so anyway, this I think he's French. So this French physiologist, Xavier Warren's, he probably has, oh, I don't know, probably like 50 papers published, and he devotes his entire laboratory to low lung volume exhalations and breath holds in conjunction with exercise. And he only studies elite athletes because his modus operandi is looking at performance enhancements with the hypoxic effect of performing the exhales and the breath holds in conjunction with pretty high intensity exercise, like sprinting, you know, cycling, whatever it may be, a lot, I mean, a lot with swimmers. And what he's been, when, you know, and this was at the end of the under, when I was doing my undergraduate research, you know, what he was finding in these studies was fascinating to me. I'm like, oh my God, really? With just your breathing, you can see more, you can improve your lactate threshold because you're exposing your body to more lactate at a lower level of exercise. And this was like mind-blowing to me. And so he has found in so many of the studies that we actually can improve our muscle buffering capacity and our performance. And he actually sees, and I'm pretty sure that Patrick McCowan talks about this. I'm not too familiar with his work, but now I need to look back on it, because I think now when I Google Xavier Worons, I see him quoting him. It's fascinating to me that he saw in almost every single one of his studies, he confirms that the athletes do indeed become hypoxic. They're getting to around anywhere between, you know, 75 to 85% blood oxygen, which of course is about what you would see on a pulse oximeter if you're training at altitude. And so I found that really interesting, that you could make that physiological change just by performing a long exhale and a breath hold. And so, and again, what was most fascinating to me is that he has produced positive conclusions in the majority of his studies, that the elite athletes who participate in the study do experience some level of improvement with their performance enhancement. And so, you know, as any elite athlete coach, I mean, that's interesting in itself, that we can just use our breath training to create mild hypoxia in the body, beneficial hypoxia. You know, not, I know for me, I'm assuming that most of your listeners are familiar to, you know, with beneficial hypoxia versus detrimental. I think there's still, you know, the general population needs to learn more about this, because of course, when, you know, whenever I say the word hypoxic exercise, oh, what are you doing? That sounds brain damaging. That sounds bad. And so we know that, you know, if you bring your blood ups into just a very mild level of hypoxia, it actually is beneficial. And so, you know, so I'm reading all these studies by Xavier Warrens, and just like mind blown, amazing. And so I immediately decide to go to just go right into graduate. And so luckily I had a passion as soon as I went in. So whenever I had the opportunity to choose the topic of my own paper, I would decide to choose, I would decide to write on some level on either voluntary breath control during exercise or hypoxic training, or intermittent hypoxic training, or altitude training, because I just was so hungry to learn so much more about those topics, you know, after seeing those studies by Xavier Warrens. And so he was, you know, very inspirational to me. I would love to be able to meet him someday. I went into the graduate. I ended up writing a 200-page thesis. If you ever are interested in like a long kind of academic read, maybe someday I'll turn it into a book and make it, you know, a little less sciencey. But I know that you understand the science of it, so you would love it. It's just like all the, you know, all the references in it. I could at least take the references out. But I also, you know, it ended up culminating in, you know, into a 200-page thesis, where I ultimately, the question I ask is, can we use voluntary breath control to positively benefit? Are there therapeutic benefits to intermittent hypoxic breathing during exercise? Now, of course, you know, I write this long paper that really dives deep into the history of intermittent hypoxic training, altitude training, the benefits of altitude training, the benefits of altitude training for elite athletes, but I don't lean into that too much because we know that's been proven, that's been studied for decades and decades and decades. I really leaned into the therapeutic benefits really for the general population person who may not think of using an altitude chamber or hypoxic training as something that could benefit them. You know, most people think, oh yeah, Olympic committees, yeah, they have altitude chambers, they train hypoxically, but that's because they're trying to get their athletes to have a competitive edge, to increase their red blood cells, just so they can have greater oxygen carrying capacity, you know, so that they can get, you know, so they can shave, you know, a tenth of a second off of their sprint time or whatever, because, you know, these elite athletes are employing whatever it takes to just achieve, you know, the gold over a silver or the silver over the bronze. So totally get that. But what really fascinated me is when I started digging into the research and just seeing how beneficial altitude training can be for the general population person in terms of cognition, changes in the brain, bone density, prevention of sarcopenia, which is the natural loss of muscle as we age because of the increased recruitment of type 2 muscle fibers when you're training at a lower oxygen state. The list goes on and on and on. There are even studies that look at rheumatoid arthritis and benefits there. I think the thing that really caught my ear or caught my eye was the cognition. I think the cognition with the, you know, with the breath control and also with the altitude training, the benefits in both of those worlds, and then me also having a history as a dancer where there's a ton of research on, you know, looking at the benefits of dance for Alzheimer's patients and just, you know, cognition in general, I started to see this triad of, wow, so breath control improves cognition, hypoxic training improves cognition, and dance improves cognition. How do I combine all of these things in some kind of a way that could really benefit a person cognitively while they're working out? And so it was just like this huge aha moment for me because I've never wanted to, even though I've turned, you know, full-time personal trainer, you know, as we spoke about earlier, we want to bring the art back into our lives.
Yes.
I've always wanted to find a way to bring dance back. You know, I've always loved dancing and singing, but particularly there's something about dance that anyone who's studied dance for a long time, they know what I mean. It's that work of the short-term memory and the reactive ability and the reaction skills, and just having to learn a series of steps or a series of patterns, whether it be with your hands, like your shadow boxing, or with your feet. There's something about that that just makes you feel so good, and you're getting this amazing brain workout. And so what I started to do during that time, as I was writing that graduate paper, is I started to put these patterns into clients' workouts. I called them attentional control patterns. And this is actually a term in psychology and sports psychology, attentional control. It's ultimately the amount of control that you have over your attention. How long can you focus for right now? How long can you hold your attention on my words? How long can you hold your attention on this foot pattern that I'm giving you right now? I know it's hard, but can you focus? Ooh, can we do it for 60 seconds this time? Can we do it for 90 seconds this time? Maybe we can try 2 minutes of focus the next time we come in, you know, and I think meditation touches on this, you know, clear your mind or only think about the ocean or only, you know, that's hard, you know, for us who have a lot on our plate, it's very challenging to focus. Yeah. And so I started putting these patterns into, you know, into clients' workouts, but not only anywhere in the workout, but as the warm-up. Because I tend to train a lot of, you know, type A individuals, you know, really, you know, high powered, you know, whether they're, you know, whether they're actors, actresses, bankers, they're, you know, they have a lot on their plate. They're in charge of a lot, you know, they're working with a lot of people. And so I would always have a challenge with them coming into the room and just, okay, now it's time to put the phone down. Okay, I know you need to, yep, I know you were just like writing your show. You were just, you know, you were just on the phone with, you know, with this one, with that one. Now's the time to turn it off. We only have 60 minutes for this workout. Maybe today we only have 30 minutes because you had to be a little late. I want you to immediately go into an attentional control combo. That's what we're going to do for our warm-up. You're going to jog 7 times and you're going to punch your arms to the side on count 7 on the 7th jog. You're going to do that 14 times in a row and you're going to attempt to do at least half of it on one exhalation. Do you remember what I just said? I know. It's like, can you imagine coming into a workout and me throwing that at you, right? And so, and at first my clients would get annoyed. They're like, oh, are you kidding me? I already have so much stress in my life. Can I just come in and do cardio and do strength and get the things that I need? You know, and I was determined to keep it in, even the ones who got annoyed by it, because I was like, no, I'm telling you, this is going to help you sharpen your lens and immediately get into the workout. And it's going to help you get a more effective workout if you can focus on this pattern immediately. Mm. And I know it's hard for you to focus, but it's hard for you to focus because your brain is scattered. You know, I want you to be intentional about this workout and I want you to get in here and get your mind in here right now. Not 5 minutes from now. If we only have a 30-minute workout today because you had a super busy day and you had to be late, 5 minutes, I mean, that's a sixth of our entire workout. I mean, that's a huge percentage, you know? So I want you to be focused every single minute and be so intentional. And so I kept with it. I was determined. And after a while, people started craving it and becoming addicted to it, because now these type A individuals who were annoyed about it at first, it was like an annoying fly in their face. They're like, no, I want to do something else. Let me run and let me just like run for 5 minutes on the treadmill to get warmed up. Because they weren't perfect at it at first, then they became obsessed with it. They're like, oh, I need, okay, well, all right, well, let's do that again. Let me try that again. Okay, well, throw a different combo at me. So I started doing even some warm-ups, you know, with this one client. He's a really high-powered banker, and he's like, you know, very, you know, just very serious, like very, you know, very competitive. And so a warm-up that I do with him is he actually has an altitude chamber in his home, in his gym. Lucky me, I know I get to like do scientific experiments in this in this amazing altitude chamber. And so something we do for a warm-up, and this is for his cognition, is I'll have him put his boxing gloves on and I'll have him get down in a squat, and I'm like, all right, the number of your address divided by 2 minus your age times 3, go. And he has to punch, and I want him to start punching while he's doing the math. Mm. Hard, right?
Yeah, very
and
hard.
We worked up to it, but it's stuff like that. Or like, I'm going to have you, okay, right now, 10% of a millennium, do that many punches, and then minus 4 and do that many jumping jacks. You know, just little cognitive, you know, games like that at altitude. So we're working with him right now. We're working about 15% oxygen in the room. So that's probably around somewhere around between like 2,500-2,700 meters. But it's normoxic, meaning that it's not a pressurized environment. It's just a shift of the nitrogen and the oxygen in the air. And so the oxygen is at 15%, whereas sea level, it's usually somewhere between 20 and like 22%. And so that's actually a huge change in the body responds to that. And your blood oxygen does go down, but not to a dangerous level. It just goes down to usually somewhere between 80 and 90, depending upon the intensity of the exercise. You know, sometimes it does go a little bit lower than that, and that is also absolutely safe. I'm very conservative, so I generally keep the blood oxygen in the 80s, because most of the literature shows that we have positive adaptations, mm-hmm. you know, with that low level of blood oxygen. But anyway, so now going back to the triad of cognition. So we have attentional control, and we have hypoxic training, and we have breath control. And so let me cut back to the beginning of the pandemic, because this is also where another big shift happened. So I had been training actually a newish client at that time. She was really, you know, really incredible. This actually was, and I know I can talk about this because she's, this is Amy Schumer, and she actually published she played a joke on me, and I'm glad I'm saying this on the podcast, because some people think that this, like, they'll look at this at these magazine articles, and some people think that that she was being serious when she sent me a cease and desist letter from her lawyer. And the cease and desist letter said, I'm suing you because my workouts were so hard. I was unable to perform daily activities after, and I was unable to pick up my son. Meanwhile, she's laughing. She thinks it's the funniest thing. Like, I come into the workout the next day and she's like, are people contacting you? Like, did you get like a bunch of extra Instagram followers? Like, you know, I thought that was like the most hilarious thing, you know? Meanwhile, she's like in the first year after having a baby. So I was, you know, I was helping her with her postnatal workout. And she was just, I had no idea this happened, because of course the crazy life I live, I already have, you know, I also have 2 kids, and I'm like, you know, running like a crazy person. I never even watched the news. So I had no idea that this happened. And you know, and then actually I did go to my Instagram, and I, you know, like overnight I got like, I don't know, like 5,000 followers or something, which was really cool because I don't have like a huge following. And and she just thought that was so funny. And anyway, but during that, yeah. So anyway, everybody, that was a joke. She didn't really mean that. She just thought it was hilarious. And then at the bottom of the article, she says, "Just kidding. Actually, AJ has helped me so much with my, you know, with my postnatal, has helped me a ton with my low back pain. And I'm, you know, I'm so happy that we're, you know, we're doing this training program." So it was funny because like the whole article is like, and she couldn't walk, and she like, and this workout is so hard, nobody could ever do it. And meanwhile, some people think that it's that she's legitimately saying that. Mm. And I'm like, well, what if I actually have an online studio someday and I'm trying to sell something? And then, you know, maybe an older person doesn't want to do my workout because they think that the workout is so hard that they're just going to keel over and die, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, she just laughed. She's like, but it's funny, and any publicity is good publicity. So anyway, so that was hilarious. But she, you know, it was really great because during that period of time, I think that's when I was in, like right in the midst of doing my graduate work. And I was, you know, I was really obsessed with that concept of low lung volume and also using a resisted exhalation to increase recruitment of the core. And so I think she was really key in developing the technique that I call breathography, which is an 8-second exhale, 2 seconds on a blow, 2 seconds on a hiss, 2 seconds on a soft shish, 2 seconds on a loud shish. And it sounds like this. So you see the final 2 seconds is of great intensity. Now it wasn't that specific breath when I first started training her. this is another really funny story. So I was becoming really obsessed with that resisted exhale. And I think many practitioners use this, I forget what the device is called. It's kind of like a breathalyzer where you blow into it, but it gives your breath a certain amount of resistance. And you really feel your deep abdominals engage when you blow in conjunction with sucking your belly button. And so you get that like transversus abdominis contraction, you know, as long as you're actually contracting your transversus abdominis and getting your pelvic floor contracted. It's actually a wonderful way to teach someone to get their deep abdominals engaged if they have a hard time knowing what their core is. And many people do. You tell someone, engage your core, and they're like, I think I'm doing it right, but I don't really know what my core is. And so I became obsessed with this idea of using a device to teach someone about their core. So I first started bringing straws in. I'm like, okay, blow into a straw, just blow into a straw, do your squat while blowing into a straw, and also loosening the ribbon around your waist. And so I started bringing just satin ribbons in, and like, you know, I would tie a ribbon around her waist. I would tie ribbons around other clients' waists. And so we would start with this vision of the transversus abdominis, which are horizontal fibers, right? It's your natural corset. And when the transversus abdominis contracts, you actually decrease the circumference of the waist. And so then that ribbon around the waist became proprioceptive feedback or tactile feedback for individuals to know, oh, interesting. Now I feel the transversus abdominis contracting. I am, oh, and in conjunction with the exhale, now I'm getting my internal obliques, my external obliques, and my transversus abdominis all at the same time, which is so key for injury prevention. And especially, you know, for someone like her or other clients who I've trained, I have a lot of people who come to me who have had previous injuries because it ended up being one of my knacks that I, you know, I really loved corrective exercise and loved helping people as a, like a post-rehab medical exercise professional. I'm actually a certified medical exercise post-rehab conditioning specialist because I just became really obsessed with the idea that that I could help a person, like once they finish their physical therapy, someone who's had injuries and they need certain modifications for exercise. I really love that, you know, the concept of being able to put those expertise into someone's exercise program. So it was really perfect, you know, to work with women postnatally and also individuals who have had exercise and teach them this certain breathing method, you know, that would help them find their core and give them immediate feedback that their core is engaged because they have a ribbon around their waist. So when you inhale, the ribbon's tight. When you exhale, it's loose. So it's pretty easy. And especially if you size it right, it's pretty, you know, it's pretty easy to feel. And so, you know, so I started bringing the straw into her, you know, and then I was having visions of when my husband, he was a professional trombone player. He's also played on Broadway. So we both had little Broadway careers. And he would sometimes practice, you know, of course, living in New York, you're in tiny spaces, so you're always cognizant of how much sound you're making, or at least trying to be respectful of your neighbors. And so sometimes he would practice with either only using the mouthpiece and kind of buzzing into it to work on his, you know, to work on his skills. But then sometimes he would blow into, and I think this is also called the breathalyzer. I could totally be wrong. Please, brass players, don't come at me. But it's like, it's this device that has a ball in it and you blow into the straw. And if you blow hard enough, then the ball hovers. You know what I mean? If you're like blowing with enough intensity. And so it gives like a horn player or even a singer, you know, direct feedback that you're blowing with enough intensity to raise the ball. Now, sometimes an instructor will say, oh, blow only with enough intensity for the ball to hover near the bottom, which would be a lower intensity exhalation, or blow hard enough so that the ball is near the top of the tube. And that's a higher intensity exhalation that won't last as long. And so I started looking at that device and I'm like, that's really interesting, because that gives a client direct feedback that they're exhaling with enough intensity of breath to get those deep abdominals fired up. Because I can't tell you how many times I've told a client, blow a birthday candle out, or whistle, or blow a balloon up. But I give them that cue and they're like, and they're like, literally no air comes out of their mouth. and it's like, you can only give someone so many cues. And so I'm like, that's it. I gotta bring the breathalyzer into her, because we're going to do abdominal exercises and she's going to blow into that and the ball is just going to hover and it's going to be so great. And she's going to feel her abs to like the nth degree and it's going to be awesome. So I'm so excited about this. So I bring it into her, and I think I also used it with her husband. And it was great. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, she immediately loosened the ribbon, especially when she contracted her pelvic floor simultaneously. So she got like a ton of transversus abdominis fibers contracted, which is important for anyone who's had low back pain. This is really strategic for anyone who needs more low back stability during exercise. And again, just a caveat, these breathing exercises are, you know, to be used in conjunction with exercise, you know, like the pulling of the navel in, the contraction of the pelvic floor. You know, we all know that we also need to do the opposite when we're doing a relaxed, like functional breath, but these are all to be used like in conjunction with exercise to prevent injury and stabilize the low back, you know, while we're exercising. So I start bringing this, this breathalyzer into her, and I just leave one at her house, and, you know, we're using it, and I'm seeing her like 5 or 6 times a week. And so, you know, we're doing these sessions every day, and she's blowing. And then finally she's like, AJ, I don't think I can blow into that thing anymore. Like, it's gross. Like, I can see my spit coming into it. It's like, it's just, and meanwhile, like, I'm starting to see this. I'm like, yeah, like, this is really good feedback, but I think that maybe there's only so much that we can do with this. And, you know, and I started seeing other clients being like, yeah, this is kind of weird. Cause like, then I'm like trying to do a squat and I have this thing hanging out of my mouth, and like, yeah, I get feedback that I'm blowing hard, but it's just all kind of weird. And, you know, and of course sometimes my enthusiasm will just like blind me to, you know, like the negative aspects of something. So I probably pushed it for too long and I'm like, no, I totally get it. Yeah. It's like totally gross. But at least now you have that connection of blowing into something and simultaneously loosening the ribbon around the waist. So I felt like we at least accomplished the goal. And that was literally like a month before the pandemic hit and everything shut down in New York and all around the world. Yeah. So everything shuts down and I feel like I was just getting onto something. You know, I'm so excited because I'm like, now, you know, we're exhaling, we're finding the core, you know, with the breathalyzer, but now we're taking the breathalyzer away because it's way gross and we're going to try something else. And just when I'm thinking, okay, how do I choreograph some kind of a breath pattern that just simulates what a person was executing with blowing into the breathalyzer, pandemic hits. I can't be with any clients. I'm like, oh no. First of all, wow, pandemic, awful, 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 awful virus. You know, everyone's, you know, confined to their homes. I'm still training. Luckily, I was able to continue with most of the clients remotely, you know, very different. But you know, now we're remote and I'm like, I'm trying to do these experiments to figure out a way to, you know, to carry on those, you know, that amazing effect that we got from using the breathalyzer. So I started, you know, I was just in my basement. We, you know, I train in the Hamptons in the summer. So we, you know, we have a house out there for when I'm training clients in the summer. And so we ended up moving out there over the pandemic, and luckily we have a basement space, which was great. So, I could set up my remote studio there, and I was just in the basement seeing clients back to back, you know, one after the other, like 8-9 hours a day, going insane, just solitary confinement, but also so inspired because I'm seeing clients. So I, you know, I'm down there and I'm, you know, I'm like writing the graduate paper on altitude training and, you know, and breath control. And I'm also thinking about like, how am I going to like get this message to clients to contract their core in the same way that they were doing when I was in person with them, blowing into this breathalyzer. And so I think it took probably like the first 2, 3 months of training clients remotely. I just through experimentation, I started playing a metronome in my basement. And this actually also was my husband's because he would use a metronome while he was playing the trombone. So I'm like, okay, metronome, what tempo are we going to be at? Well, if 6 breaths per minute, it is the rate of breath that we should be performing to most benefit our autonomic nervous system, then maybe I should just set that metronome at 60 beats per minute. If we breathe at 6 breaths per minute, then, you know, then that's about 10 seconds per breath. And I can just use that 60 beats per minute, that second, to choreograph a breath where I have about 8 seconds on the exhale and 2 seconds on the inhale. So, you know, of course my mind's spinning. I'm like, okay, how are we going to do this? How are we going to do this? So, you know, the first couple of sessions, I just say, loosen the ribbon around your waist while you just exhale for 8 seconds. I mean, for the first couple of weeks, that was moderately effective, but I felt like I could do something more. So I started experimenting and I even, you know, experimented on my husband. He's great because, you know, he played the trombone for so long, so he has a lot of control with his mouth and his breath. And so it was really great that he helped me with this, but I ended up figuring out that remotely, if I instructed a client to perform certain sounds every 2 seconds, and I was holding them accountable for making those sounds, they more effectively engaged their core. So I probably over a course of like 4 or 6 weeks, I came to the conclusion that starting with 2 seconds on a blow, then going 2 seconds on a hiss, then 2 seconds on a soft shish, then ending it with 2 seconds on a loud shish, we move from an area of very low intensity exhale to high intensity exhale so that we're getting a high level of core recruitment. We're blowing all the air out of our lungs, so it's forcing us to work to low lung volume. Xavier Warons, thank you very much. And also, it allows us to have enough air to be able to exhale for 8 seconds because many people, you say inhale and exhale, and all the air is out within 2 seconds. Well, I don't want these people, my clients, hyperventilating while they're exercising. In fact, I would rather they be a bit on the hypoventilation side and slowing their breathing down. So by me playing the metronome, so they're hearing the metronome, I know that we're staying at a rate of 6 breaths per minute. And by me saying blow, hiss, soft shish, loud shish, like an ocean, blow all the air out, loosen the ribbon around your waist. I mean, I saw all of this happen in like 2 weeks' time. I started like immediately with every single client saying blow, hiss, soft shish, loud shish, in conjunction with their core training, their functional movement training. And it was really amazing to have this epiphany and come upon this discovery, like at this period of time where I was going to be only doing remote training for about, I mean, gosh, at least a year, if not more. And so I was so grateful for that just like the combination of writing that, you know, writing the graduate paper and being so obsessed with voluntary breath control, just having had the aha moment of like using that breathalyzer to get that resisted exhale, all came together, you know, as I went into 100% remote training, because then I was like, okay, I gotta find an even more effective way to give the client tactile feedback to make sure that they're preventing injury when I'm remotely training them, because I can't be hands-on at that point. I'm always paranoid, you know, if my hand is not on the low back, if my hand is not on like the tip of the shoulder, then something is going to go awry, you know, because I just love to have that, you know, that control and that, you know, my own tactile feedback. So I know the spine is staying in neutral, especially if someone has suffered with like herniated disc. We want to make sure that back stays super, super stable. So I was super, super excited about that. And I just went for it. I just started teaching almost every single client that, you know, that breathing method in conjunction with their training and even clients who I'd been with for, you know, 15 years at that point, it was new to them. And they're like, that's interesting. You've never done that before. I'm like, yeah, but try it. It's effective. It's going to work your brain. It's going to work your musculoskeletal system. It's also going to work your respiration. You're going to get it all done at the same time in a 60-minute session. So I was just, you know, so excited about it. So I'm now all the clients are remote training and they're doing the 2-8 breathing with the blow hiss softish slouchish, which I call breathography just because of my past as a dancer, and it is choreography of the breath, right? Blow hiss softish slouchish, you know, it's choreographed sounds. And even though it is the 2-8 breathing, another reason I call it breathography is because at times when the student becomes more advanced, we add breath retentions at the conclusion of the 8-second exhale. So at the beginner level, it's just a 2-second breath hold, and it works all the way up at the most advanced level to a 12-second breath hold after the conclusion of the 8-second exhale, which now I know because I've run a bunch of informal trials, and I also have a study running at Long Island at New York Institute of Technology. This is my first postgraduate research, so we're going to see you know, how hypoxic everyone is becoming. But I do know that the that most individuals do get to that you know, that beneficial place that shows positive adaptations of about 85% blood oxygen, especially when they do the longer breath holds. You know, when they're not doing any breath holds, they're probably in, like, you know, the upper 90s, maybe even not dropping their blood oxygen, but certainly their carbon dioxide is raising, which the body also does adapt to. So it's really exciting. So I'm finishing up my graduate paper and I'm training the clients remotely, and we're doing the 2-8 breathing. And of course, everyone has pulse oximeters around because it's the pandemic and we're all concerned about getting COVID and our blood oxygen dropping, you know. And of course, again, I know blood oxygen dropping seems scary. It's scary when you don't know what the cause is, you know. If you're doing it on purpose with your breath, or you're climbing a mountain, or you're altitude training, then blood oxygen lowering to, you know, just 80% blood oxygen is not necessarily detrimental as long as you dose it appropriately. When you don't know what the cause is, that's bad. Then you want to go to the doctor and figure out why, you know, what's blocking in the lungs, you know, what's going on. And so I'm finishing up the graduate paper and I'm becoming increasingly obsessed with altitude training and hypoxic training, and thinking, wow, why aren't more people using this amazing training protocol that makes it so that, like, you can have more benefits in, you know, with less load on the body? I mean, there's a ton of literature that talk about even, like, elite athletes using, you know, hypoxic chambers to deload their body or de-stress their body, because they can train at a lower intensity but not lose their conditioning because of the added stress of the low oxygen. And so I started thinking, wow, this is the perfect workout for individuals who have had maybe previous injury and can't work to high intensity, or can't, you know, put a bunch of extra compressive load on their body because they, you know, just because when you've had an injury, you're more prone to injury. So you just need to just be cognizant of the movement that you're doing and be even smarter with your protocols. And so I thought, wow, I wish that this was more, that hypoxic and altitude training was more accessible to the general public. You know, right now it's really not, even with the, you know, not nearly as expensive as, like, a hypobaric chamber, the pressurized chambers that are millions of dollars, but even the ones that have been developed, the normoxic ones that aren't pressurized, they're still several thousand dollars. You know, most people, you know, most normal individuals, like, can't afford to, you know, put an altitude changing chamber in their home. And it isn't very common to, you know, for there to be altitude spaces, altitude gyms. I mean, even here in New York City, there's probably a couple of physical therapy facilities that have tiny hypoxic chambers. And if you want to go in and, you know, just ride a bike or a treadmill, you can, but it's not really available to the public. And so I'm looking at all these pulse oximeters that are in my basement. I probably have 3 or 4 of them, you know, over the pandemic. And I start thinking, wow, 8-second exhale, what is that doing to my blood oxygen? Interesting. So I'm testing, I'm working out, I'm doing the 8-second exhale. Even with the 8-second exhale in conjunction with exercise, I do see it dip a little bit. And I think, that's really interesting. I wonder if I add short breath retentions while doing some core work, while doing some walking on the treadmill, while doing some functional movement patterns, some squats, some lunges. And it was so, I mean, I literally, like, you would think I was a mad scientist. I was in my basement in between remote clients, like, one pulse oximeter on each finger, you know, quickly going through the blow, hiss, soft shish, loud shish, adding a 2-beat breath hold, a 4-beat breath hold, you know, what's that doing to my blood oxygen? How's it here? How's it there? And what I found was that I was effectively training, basically altitude training, by just using the low lung volume exhale, like Xavier Warren's, by draining all of the oxygen from the lungs and then adding those breath retentions at the conclusion of the 8-second exhale. So, So, you know, wheels are spinning and I'm like, how do I introduce this to clients? How do I, you know, how do I, you know, make this seem fun and safe? And so I just started really simple. I just started adding just a 2-beat breath hold at the conclusion of the 8-second exhale. And, you know, I had the metronome playing. So I would say, for example, do a squat where you do down 1 second, up 1 second. So that would be blow, hiss, soft shish, loud shish, one on the breath hold. Inhale. Now you're going to try it with a 4-beat breath hold. Blow, hiss, soft shish, loud shish, hold. Inhale. You see, so now you have the 4-beat breath hold. And it was really successful. And I, with the remote clients. And so I would say, and of course, while you're doing the breath hold, keep the ribbon loose around your waist so that we know that transversus abdominis is staying engaged, right? So on the 2-beat breath hold, 4-beat breath hold, sometimes even up to a 6-beat breath hold with those two total body exercises. And I would even have some of them put the pulse oximeter on and they're like, yeah, I'm like 85. Great. Oh, but it's quickly recovering. I feel great. I feel fine. And what I realized, and I didn't realize this until after a few weeks of adding the breath retentions in at the conclusion of the 8-second exhale, was that their core was getting so strong because of that isometric hold of the transversus, that corset muscle. At the conclusion of the 8-second exhale, when you hold your breath, at that point, there's no movement in the core. It's just held. So your diaphragm has raised because you did that long exhale, right? And your transversus abdominis is just very, very highly contracted, you know, with that pelvic floor contraction. So I just thought that was really cool. And then over the, you know, over the coming months, I started developing a zip up activation that they would do at the top of every one of their exercise, which happens on a hiss exhalation. And it's basically like a zipper from the bottom to the top. And this happens as a setup for every single exercise. And it goes pelvic floor, navel, ribs, shoulders, and head. So this is like a postural setup that mm-hmm. happens on a hiss exhale. And I cue it as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Pelvic floor, navel, ribs, shoulders, head. And then I do a double engaged inhale because you're very engaged after that hiss exhalation. And I do it on an engaged inhale because it forces the air into the lateral ribs and the back of the rib cage. So you're purposefully actually keeping your abs engaged on the inhale, which I know seems counterintuitive. Again, this is not functional breathing that we do the other 23 hours of the day. This is for the workout. You double engaged inhale so that the ribs press out like an accordion and the air gets, you direct the breath. You direct the breath into the back and you direct the breath into the side because the abs are so tight. You know, I know it seems counterintuitive, but this is, you know, for the purpose of the workout. So like, exactly. So you inhale and it's a double inhale and you stay braced in your core. So that gives you more spinal stability as well. And so ultimately over the course of the pandemic, it turned in, one breathography breath cycle looks like this. And I'll turn to the side so that you can see it. It starts with the zip up activation. Starts with a zip up activation and it goes pelvic floor, navel, ribs, shoulders, head, hiss, double engaged inhale, 1, 2. Now we go into our 8-second exhale, blow for 2 seconds, hiss for 2 seconds, softly shishing for 2 seconds, loudly shishing for 2 seconds, loosening the ribbon around the waist. And maybe we hold the breath for 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Now it's called breathography because at the beginning of any exercise, I'll say, and your breath retention formula for this exercise is 6-4-6 or 4-4-4. That just means for the 3 sets of exercise where we have an 8-second exhale, we follow it with those breath retention. So if I say to you, your breath retention formula for this next exercise is 2-2-2, that means you're doing 3 8-second exhalation breath cycles with all 2-beat breath holds at the end, you know? And like, I know that seems very advanced and like kind of hard to follow if you, you know, when you're a novice, but anyone who's done any online training with me and my clients knows, okay, I get it. And now it's kind of mentally stimulating and it keeps the workout interesting because I'm focusing on my breath choreography, my breathography, always in conjunction with any movement. There's no movement where the breath is not very specifically choreographed with a metronome in conjunction with everything, every single exercise. And so that was really exciting to work, to be working on that and focused on that over that period of time when we were all remote. You know, I was just being a mad scientist and, you know, and that was really exciting. And so when you know, when our family moved back to New York City after, I think it was a year and a half or 2 years out there, and we started, you know, I started going back in person with a lot of clients, I decided to really put this method together from all of the discoveries that I made over those 2 years and try some level of an online bootcamp. So I, you know, using the metronome, I structured an 8-week bootcamp where I invited just some followers on Instagram, probably had like 40 people in class. And we went through 8 weeks of 3 times a week total body training and 2 times a week core training with pre-bed mobility routines every night. And there was progressive breathography over the 8 weeks. So we started with just 8-second exhales in conjunction with the routine. And then on week two, we'd add the 2-beat breath retentions. Week three, we'd add the 4-beat breath retentions, so on and so forth. So that, you know, by the time you get to week like 4 and 5, you're adding 6, 8, 10, and 12 beat breath retentions, depending upon the intensity of exercise with all of the movements. So, you know, then you have like 3 or 4 weeks of training, like pretty intensely in conjunction with that pretty intense breathing. But then after the 8-week cycle, then you take it back to that level one breathography where there's no breath retention. So now we do this 8-week boot camp where, you know, it progressively works up the breath retention. So the breath is getting more intense, the movements are getting more intense. And then after those 2 months of training, then you go back to low intensity training. Because I've always found as a trainer over time, the way to prevent injury is to make sure you're paying attention to how intense you're training over the course of the week, over the course of the year, and making sure that you're modulating it so that it's not always intense. You know, the weekend warriors are the ones who, you know, who tend to get injured. So basically I did my first online boot camp and I called it Hypoxics because I, you know, my husband and I were also business partners. So we've, you know, we were artists and then went into, you know, into business together. And so we, you know, we came up with the name together and the Hypoxics name, ultimately hypoxic, of course, the six breaths per minute, there's a couple. Oh, and the H in there, we also made like a hexagon because it's the, you know, the hexagon is the strongest shape in nature and the whole thing. But anyway, we call it hypoxics, and we did a couple boot camps and it was really, I mean, amazing results. I mean, people were like, wow, I got off my colitis medication, my IBS medication, which that's something I didn't expect, but I also do know there's a relationship between, you know, breath training and GI. I'm definitely not giving medical advice, definitely not a doctor, but that was one of the like interesting, testimonials that I didn't expect. But ultimately it's just, you know, I've just seen such a high level of success in core training and injury prevention and, autonomic nervous system changes, in terms of anxiety and, you know, and just building muscle. I mean, the men who have done the boot camp have claimed that they've lost, you know, body fat around their midsection doing like a lower intensity exercise, but by adding the hypoxic breathing. Mm. And so it's just really interesting. You know, I can't say that I have the answers as all the answers as to why it works, because I think it's obviously still such a new area, you know, and I know that like Wim Hof's breathing is hypoxic at a certain level, I think more from like hyperventilation and, you know, breath holds. And so he does a level of, you know, breath holds. I think that, you know, there's quite a few people around the world who are doing it. But the thing that has always bothered me is that there's no level of like progression or like measurement, you know, whereas like hypoxic breathing could be bad for one person, but great for another person. You know, why is that? And how do we dose it? And, you know, and because I studied altitude training so hard, you know, I'm now really determined to continue on the academic side and always have some kind of a study running that's looking at the hypoxic breathing in conjunction with exercise and like, what are the benefits? So the study that's running out of New York Institute of Technology right now is, and it's about halfway done. It's a 12-week study and it's a group of women, who were going to look at their basal metabolic rate, their strength, and also their body composition before and after. We have a control group that, has no breath cueing. And then we have the experimental group that has the breathography in conjunction with exercise. So really, really excited about that. You know, the online boot camps were you know, successful in the sense that we saw that we were able to like help a lot of people. So that really just lighted a fire inside of me. And this is probably about 6 months ago at this point. And so ultimately I decided to start making video, you know, setting up the studio to look a little bit nicer, so it didn't look like a dingy basement. Mm-hmm. and start recording. And ultimately I started recording core programs, circuit training programs, doing live classes. And I, you know, so basically my life right now is just still training in, you know, in New York City every day, all of my clients. And then when I come home in the afternoons and the evenings, I'm either doing something like this, having this amazing conversation with you, or I'm recording one of the progressive core videos, total body strength videos, or doing a live class that uses some level of breathography in conjunction with the movement. And we basically work in 8 week cycles with the live classes. So we work 8 weeks, where week one is level one breathography, week two is level two, so on and so forth. So that, you know, if someone goes on the website, they can see, oh, that's a week three workout. I know I'm going to be doing level three, level four breathography, which is like, you know, four beat breath holds at the conjunction of the 8 second exhale, you know. And once you do the method for a little while, then you understand, you know, what the formula is and pretty much what you're getting into based on what week workout you choose. And so it's been really great. And we, you know, we've been building the website full of content. It's just been really fun. And, you know, many of the people who did the online, the first couple of boot camps I did, they signed up for the, you know, the online program. But it's very new, you know. I have to say, we haven't even really, you know, done any like advertising or anything like that yet. So it's still very small, which I'm happy about, because I still feel like it's so new. But I'm excited. But now I feel like we have enough content, and it's just so exciting. The testimonials that we have gotten so far. So I feel confident that this method can help a lot of people. And that's it, from the log cabin to current day hypoxics. That's what's going on.
Wow. Well, thank you first of all for sharing all of that. That's incredible. And by the way, you're a really engaging speaker. So I'm just sitting there mesmerized. But monkey brain. I've got so many questions for you. Right. And so we might have to end up doing a part two at some point, AJ, because I just want to pick your brain about breath. I'm trying to think where we go with this, because there's just a few bits that you said that I really wanted to get a bit more of. Like, talk to me about lactate a little bit more. What's going on with it? You mentioned lactate at the very start. Can you give me the simple overview of the benefits of the breathing exercises and what that's doing?
Absolutely. And so this is something that I started to read a lot about when I was studying Xavier Warons. I know anyone who listens to this podcast is now going to look up Xavier Warons. It's Xavierwoorons. And I think he's a French physiologist, could be Swiss, but he also works with Gregoire Millet. And they have a hypoxic lab, and they also do a lot of like traditional altitude training research. But so a lot of his studies looked at the fact that these athletes were improving their lactate threshold and improving their muscle buffering capacity, because the breath holds at low lung volume were spiking lactate sooner than usual, spiking carbon dioxide, and also lowering the blood pH, and also lowering the blood oxygen, all the things that typically happen when we work at a much higher intensity of exercise. Mm-hmm. And so what he found was, and this would make sense, when you expose your body to something, your body adapts to it. You know, so if you sprint uphill 3 times a week, as long as you get the right recovery period in between, your body is probably going to make certain adaptations so that it's, in the future, it's not as stressful for the body, because the body's like, oh, I'm being exposed to that thing. Okay, let me make it so that I can work out for longer before I experience the negative effects from the lactate. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately what he found was, oh, wow, so I'm improving this muscle buffering capacity, and I'm seeing that in conjunction with those, you know, with that spike in lactate, the spike in carbon dioxide sooner than usual. So that would mean that because the body can be exposed to it for longer, we're getting those adaptations of being, you know, exposed to lactate and also in carbon dioxide, and also the blood pH lowering. Yeah. And so obviously there's certain physiological changes that are happening within the body so that we can handle that acidosis better Acidosis. So also for the person who doesn't know anything about exercise physiology, when you get to a repetition where like it's burning so much, you're like, I'm going to do like one, maybe two more reps, or maybe that's the last rep. Cause that is like, I'm like gassed. I have almost, you know, nothing left in there. And so, but by pushing at least to that point, you've spiked those chemicals in the body. So the body can at least be exposed to them so that the body can then adapt and be stronger to be able to handle, you know, those moments when, you know, when the lactate rises, when the hydrogen, you know, when the blood pH lowers, that's very uncomfortable. And these are the things that tend to limit athletes. You know, what are the things that, I mean, some people say it's more psychological. Some will say, no, it's muscular. It's like, your muscles get to a point where there's like so much lactate building up and there's so much, you know, lowering of the blood pH that like, you just have to stop. And so I think Xavier Warrens was so interested in this because he's like, oh, this is really interesting. Like with just an extended exhalation and a breath hold, we can expose the body to these things at a lower intensity of exercise so that we can spend longer exposing ourselves to these things that I really want my athletes to adapt to without having to like run uphill at 15% incline, you know, at like 8 miles an hour, you know? So he looked at it as a way of being like injury preventative because you could expose yourself to these things, without putting as much impact on your body. And an athlete, like you want to really titrate their program and make sure that they're not overtraining, you know? And so any coach might be like, oh, I want to work on the lactate threshold. Well, in order to do that, you need to work at, you know, 80, 85% of your maximum heart rate or more, especially if you're an elite athlete, you have, you know, so much power that you need to work really intensely to get to that point where those molecules start to spike in the body. But you don't, as an athlete, if you have a competition coming up, you don't always want to train to that level of intensity because then that's going to gas your body and you might not perform as well at the competition. So I think he was really, one of the reasons he was really intrigued about this is just because, hey, wow, we can work at I can have someone cycling maybe at like 60 or 70% intensity, but with using the breathing, their body can make certain adaptations as if they're doing the higher intensity exercise. And of course, that was like, when I read that, I was like, what? Yeah. Mind blown. That's crazy. So, you know, then I started thinking, oh, well, this is like, could this, for the person who can't work high intensity, could this be really great for, you know, all of my clients who have maybe had a low back injury in the past or a knee problem or something that makes it so they can't put a bunch, you know, a lot of extra shear force and compression on their body, but they also love the feeling, the mental feeling, and also the physical feeling of working high intensity. And so then I started incorporating low intensity movements in conjunction with these, you know, these long breath holds. I mean, not long breath holds, long exhales and short breath holds. And definitely the feedback I was getting was like, wow, I was like feeling that in my legs. That was so intense. It felt so much more intense than usual. And, you know, and a lot of these, you know, my clients are like, oh, I want to work high intensity. I love that feeling. But if you've had a previous injury, you put yourself at risk if you work high intensity a lot, you know? So I looked at that as a way to, you know, to just like trick the client into feeling or getting those, also those brain, you know, those brain benefits of working at a higher intensity level without putting as much load on the body, you know?
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Last question for you. And we absolutely need to do a part two where I need to pick you.
Oh my God, brain. We have to. I can't wait.
Yes, please. Thank you. Let's talk a bit about Gwyneth Paltrow. And it's a very interesting connection here because I don't know if you saw in the news last week that Chris Martin came out to say that he'd been trained by Patrick McEwen how to breathe.
No way. That's crazy. So that's... Well, you know, I haven't seen Gwyneth in a while, actually. Just, you know, I mean, I trained her for a while. I was training her for about 3 years. But I haven't seen her in a little while. So I would have known that if I was, you know, but she's in LA and it was like, it was starting to get really hard doing the remote sessions. And she also, you know, is amazing. She you know, partners with Tracy Anderson and that whole method. So she's, I say hi every once in a while, but.
So what was that like working with her? Can you tell us a little bit about that story?
Oh, sure. Yeah, no, she is so incredible. So hardworking. Really. I did also, I put a ribbon around her waist, you know, while working. She was like a little bit before the time that I started doing all the breathography. I would love to do the breathography patterns on her and, you know, to really work on her low back stabilization because she, you know, she's really into the core training. So that would be, I'm going to ask her if she wants to do, if she, you know, next time she's in New York, I want to teach her breathography now that I've really fine-tuned this method. But she's absolutely incredible. I trained both her and I trained her mom, Blythe Danner, and they're just such hard workers. She really loved that, you know, that ribbon around the waist, you know, combining just a general exhale in conjunction with strength training. We did a lot of strength training together. She was working on just, you know, adding in some total body heavier weight training, but trying to figure out a way to combine that with her endurance training and the dance training. She does a lot of dance training with Tracy Anderson. But she felt like she needed something in addition to that to stabilize her low back and just work on injury prevention. Because I think the Tracy Anderson method, I think many, many females love it because of the, you know, the dance training. I think there's like that cognitive element. And also I think they're 2-hour cardio dance classes. And so you get major, major endorphins from doing it. But I think that it lacks the functional weight training and also like a focus on like stabilizing the low back. And so that was the thing that she was missing in her program at the time. And so also targeted glute training. So ultimately during the period of time I was with her, we, over a 3-year period, we really, on and off remote. And then also, she, you know, when she goes out, to Long Island, you know, when I'm also out there, you know, just working on increasing the strength, the endurance strength of the glutes, but also the really like the fast twitch fibers of the glutes, which really helped a lot, you know, helped a lot with stabilizing her low back, and then combining the functional, and she was one of the first people that I did this with, combining the total body functional training with the breath control. Now, again, I wasn't doing the blow hiss, soft shish, loud shish back when I was, you know, when we were working together. But I think that she would really enjoy it because she loved that feeling of just being very, very, very contracted in the deep core and loosening the ribbon around the waist while doing a Pilates exercise or while doing a lunge or while doing a squat. And she also was one of the first people who I started doing a lot of anti-rotational work with, which is, and I do this a lot in my online classes where, you know, we're using a combination of bands and weights to get the core active while doing something like a squat to curl while, you know, say for example, the band is on the right side of my body. So on the exhalation, we're slicing the band across the body. So we're loosening the ribbon around the waist, and then we're squatting to curl 2 times with the band sliced across the body and then release. Or the band is behind her and she's pushing the band straight to the front on the exhale. So she's feeling a high level of activity in this oblique of the pushing hand and doing the 2 bicep curls. You see what I'm saying? So it's almost like you're like doing a standing Pilates routine. Mm-hmm. And I think at that time I was, it was right after I got my Pilates certification. So I was really into the idea of taking Pilates and combining Pilates with functional movement training, because I love the concept of Pilates, but I always had a hard time me being confined to the reformer or even a client being confined to the reformer, because I just felt like it lacked that, you know, that activity of daily living, like 3-dimensional functional movement training. And many of the clients who I work with who only have, you know, 30, 45, 60 minutes for a training session because they're so busy, I really want to get it all done at once. And she was, because she's also so busy, you know, she was like, okay, let's go. Got 40 minutes. Let's do it. You know? And, but she also really loved the core training, but wanted to add in that heavier strength training. But she was very, you know, she's, as many people are, very bored of the idea of just performing. Okay, now we're going to do 12 sets of bicep curls. Now we're going to tricep kickbacks, you know, boring. You know, one of the reasons she loves dance training is because it's interesting, you know, it's always changing. But yet, in order to gain strength over time, you need to stay on the same exercises for long enough to see adaptations in the body. So how do you balance that out? So with her, because I knew she was getting dance training with Tracy Anderson, I didn't add that in, even though I'm a professional dancer, so I easily could have, but she didn't need that. So we would just do, I would bring the Pilates to her standing position so that her core was active by, you know, pressing into resistance, pulling into resistance on one side of the body only, and then doing the weight training, holding the weight in the other hand. So it could be also 2 lunges, you know, with the right foot forward, you know, and doing an overhead press. So if the right foot is forward, I do an overhead press with, you know, the 8-pound weight while holding the other band, you know, the band to the front. So I'm getting my core active. I'm exhaling for three repetitions, and I'm going down and up in the split squat. Loosening the ribbon around the waist, three. So now you've gotten your functional strength training, you know, you've got, you're getting your leg training, you're getting your shoulder training, but you're also kind of doing a Pilates exercise by pushing into the band or pulling into the band. And I will say that she was really key in, you know, in development of those exercises that I still, that have been evolving and I still use to this day, because of that love of needing, like, her brain just needs to keep things interesting. She's so smart, you know, I mean, clearly everything that she's accomplished, I mean, an entrepreneur, you know, unbelievable actress, and has had such a great career. And, and I saw that immediately, like that need to keep things interesting. And I also feel that way. And I have a lot of other clients who are like, yeah, I get it. I need to keep doing this three times a week with like little progressions, but let's like figure out a way to change it up. Let's figure it out to be like, let's mix it up. Let's like, you know, so simply for her, just adding, you know, a few repetitions on an exhale, you know, while loosening the ribbon around the waist and doing some level of a standing Pilates exercise using a, usually a, like a pull, I usually use like a 10 pound pull up assist band in conjunction with the weight training, then that became interesting, you know? And I really, that was one of the foundations for that whole, really the foundation of the anti-rotational training that I do in a lot of the exercises, even to this day in the online studio. Yeah. And she's a really hard worker. And once she understood that and she felt that, you know, that work in the brain, and then she also saw the, you know, the increased tone in her legs and her glutes. And I helped her get ready for a Harper Bazaar cover. That was 3 summers ago at this point. And she looked fantastic. And she definitely, I remember she sent me the cover of the, you know, of the magazine, she always looks great. You know, clearly she has great genes, but I think that she's definitely, an ectomorph body type, you know, very long, lean. And so, I think it was nice for her to see, you know, that increase, that like little increase in muscle mass in her legs and also her glutes. And that really helped a lot with, any low back pain.
Cool. Thank you for sharing. That was very cool to hear.
Of course. Yeah.
So we will pause part one and we will schedule part two in the near future. For now, where can people find you?
Oh, absolutely. So you can find me at AJ Correctology on Instagram. That's AJ CORECTOLOGY. Correctology is the name of my first personal training business when I first went on my own. And now you can also find me at Hypoxics. That's hypoxix.org. That's the central page where my bio is, and there's links to the online studio, and the online studio is hypoxix.studio. And that's where you can, I have a 14-day free program, and in the 14-day free program, you can just try it out, see if it's for you. I teach you the breathography fundamentals, how to perform the engaged inhale, the engaged exhale, the zip up activation, and how to apply that to several modalities of exercise. That is functional strength training, circuit training. I do about 3-4 live classes a week right now. And I would love to have anyone come on and join. We're ready for you. We are ready for you, ready for action. I just started a YouTube channel, also called Hypoxics. I know now that I have an online business, I'm like, well, I have to do all the things now. So Hypoxics is really the name. So now there's also a YouTube channel, and now I've populated it with the, at least the breathography fundamentals, and also, a handful of workouts. And I'll be, posting on there 2 or 3 times a week with total body workouts and, you know, and also core workouts and just little tips and tricks. And I think that's everything.
Cool. Well, we will put that in the show notes for everybody. So if you're listening to this or watching this now, you can just simply scroll down and click on those links. I'm looking forward to joining your boot camps and learning from you, AJ. So that's going to be very exciting. And I can see this just being absolutely huge. It's very exciting to see where you're going to be over the next 12 months, 18 months. Very, very exciting. So I feel very, very lucky to have got you on the podcast at this stage. So thank you very much for getting in contact. And I look forward to talking to you again. Any last words before we call it a day?
I think just the last words are start practicing slow breathing, 2 second inhale and 8 second exhale. Don't go into the breath retentions until you feel your core engaging with that 8 second exhale. So if you can just look at a stopwatch, You know, not everyone loves the sound of a metronome, but just look at a stopwatch. Can you inhale for 2 seconds and exhale for 8 seconds? If you can do that, you're going to improve your autonomic nervous system and also improve your core. Start there.
Super.
And I'll see you at the studio.
I'll see you at the studio. Thank you. And we'll see you all in the next Breathcast, everybody. Thanks so much. Cheers. Thanks, AJ.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for sticking all the way through to the end. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. There's literally a million things that you could be doing with your time right now. And the fact that you gave it to this conversation, I really want to thank you for that, because your attention is super, super valuable. And I hope you got a lot of value from this. If you did, please consider sharing this podcast with a friend or a family member or a colleague. And if you haven't done so, just a reminder, grab that free PDF that I've got, my 7 favorite breathing exercises, super simple exercises that you can just click on. It plays them through YouTube and you can just practice different things, getting to sleep, reducing stress, firing ourselves up. So that's just a really quick thing. It's a bit of value that I can give you as a bit of a thank you. And it means that you can kind of just get some practice in on some of these different techniques that are out there as well. And finally, I just wanted to mention that I am open to breath coaching. I only take on a couple of clients each month because it's very bespoke. So I'm looking for you if you're the type of person that is high performance, that is very driven and wants to work on themselves and knows that there's something isn't quite right. Maybe there's a little bit too much stress, maybe there's a bit of anxiety. Maybe you can see burnouts a couple of stations away. Whatever it is, athletic performance, then it's worth having a free breath consultation with me. I do a complimentary 45-minute set on YouTube. And we can really have a chat and just see if the breath coaching is a good fit for you or not. And what I'll do is I'll take some breath measurements with you, work out exactly where your breathing is right now. We'll run a number of tests, get the tape measure out, measure your diaphragm and your rib cage. And then we'll look at your goals. Where are you trying to get to? What are those things? Let's try and crystallize those goals. And then off the back of that, if we think there's a really good fit there, then we can talk about my 6-week coaching package. And my goal is to shortcut everything for you, because you can go and listen to all 100 of my podcasts. You can read 50 books on breathing, or we can spend 6 weeks together, an hour a week, and I'll help you get where you need to get to a lot quicker. So if that sounds like something that you might be interested in, you can click below to apply. It's a very limited number of spots. I'm really look forward to meeting some of you. And if it's not for you right now, then don't forget, on this YouTube channel, there's over 300 videos. We've got 100 interviews with the world's top breathing experts and 250 breathing exercises for you just to try, or categorize beginner, expert, all those different things. So what you can do next, you can try this breathing exercise here, or you might want to try this podcast here. I think that'll be quite useful for you. Thank you so much for being with Take a Deep Breath, and I'll see you on one of these or the complimentary breath consultation. Cheers.